Afghanistan weren't there in 1992. That's what we were saying all the way through the chase, as the Cricket World Cup table proppers up looked like causing an almighty upset against semi-final hopefuls Pakistan, the history boys. But Safra's men held their nerve, coming out the right side of a thriller for the third time at the competition. And then at Lord's, Australia marched on. It was a game full of classic moments without being anywhere near to a classic. There were two of the catches of the tournament from Steve Smith and Martin Guptill. Smith took his first ODI wicket in 1,679 days, and Trent Bolt claimed the first World Cup hat-trick by a New Zealander. But, in the end, Australia ran out easy winners by 86 runs. They didn't have it all their own way though, and this is where I'm going to bring in the suave Taha Hashim, style guru and one of Wisden's own, for his podcast debut on the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. Taha, welcome.
That's quite the intro, Ben. Thank you for that. I've been languishing in the reserves for quite some time, waiting for a first team call up. So good to be here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely long overdue. Okay, well let's get right to it. What is your moment of the day?
My moment of the day was Lockie Ferguson's first ball today, where he sort of bowled a sharp bouncer, got Warner's glove, and you know David Warner departed. But Ferguson really is just. He's been my player of the tournament for me, really. I've loved watching him. I love the whole look, you know, the long sleeves, the black shoes. I know it's quite contentious, but I'm digging it. I love the mustache.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, he's a pretty good bowler too, isn't he? And to get Warner today, who's been, you know, who's had a very good World Cup. It was a fantastic delivery, and I just there's something about watching Ferguson bowl. I think he's just he's been up there as. Probably, yeah. Well, for me, player of the tournament.
Yeah. Was there a bit of an up yours to the captain, but a sort of a I can bowl too? Because Matt Henry was left out today and came and gave the new ball to Colin de Grandhomme to sort of swing it at 78 miles an hour. And he did a brilliant job. He kept it very quiet. And then, as you say, Ferguson comes on and strikes straight away. Did you sense a bit of that? He was like, give me the new ball next time, Skip? Or
yeah, I mean, it was interesting. You see Trent Ball is quite quick coming at one end. And then out comes Colin de Grandhomme. Not a bad bowler.
But a trundler.
Yeah, a trundler.
A very good one, but yeah.
A very good one, yeah. But then, you know, this Ferguson, Kane Williamson said this in the press conference after the game. Ferguson, you can bring him on at any time and he'll get you wickets. Similar to what Stark is for Australia. I think Ferguson's sort of taken that role for New Zealand. And, you know, I don't care if he's not, you know, given the new ball. He's, you know, I like watching him just bang it in and that's what he did today.
Yeah, and as you say, Australia's opening pair both fell cheap today. It's only the second time in the tournament that neither of them has passed 50. And they were, 92 for 5 at some point? At one point, Australia, and they were really struggling, weren't they? And like just again, I guess, without looking at their absolute best, they kind of found a way.
Yeah, you feel like New Zealand have done the hard work. Finch and Warner have just—they've been brilliant for Australia. They were the other day at Lord's against England.
They got Smith, Maxwell too, cheaply.
Some brilliant catches in there.
Yeah.
That I'm sure we'll get to. But yeah, they've done the hard work. But then Alex Carey, who's, you know, quietly having just a brilliant tournament. You know, he got that against India. He was that guy who got, I think, 50 off 25 balls. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, you know, he's not brute strength. He's not, you know, you look at Josh Butler for England, wicket-keeper batsman, who's just explosive. Carey doesn't seem that way, but he's a very smart cricketer. And he just finds the gaps. He was playing on a different pitch today.
Mm-hmm.
Timing the ball brilliantly, driving well, pulling well. And then Khawaja was, you know, grinding it out at the other end. But Carey was just, I thought he was phenomenal getting that 71 order, which was the game-defining partnership.
Yeah, it's a good point. So I think we probably think of him as a sort of a BBL basher sort of thing. But actually, there weren't any six in his knock. It was 11 boundaries, I think, and but still a kind of a runner ball innings. And it was sort of counter-attacking in its own way, wasn't it? In that he didn't let the New Zealand bowlers bolt him because he was taking over the strike and making sure that the partnership was built kind of straight away, wasn't it? And he can do both things, can't he? He can explode, but he can rebuild. He did against West Indies as well, the other game when Australia have struggled at the top of the order.
Yeah, it's just a really sort of understated cricketer. He's someone we haven't really paid attention to, but over the last few months, he's really come to the fore for Australia and really bailed them out today because they have been so reliant on those two up top. And, you know, you go back to the West Indies game when Nathan Court and I played that really crucial innings. I'd put Alex Carey's innings sort of alongside that one in just how it just swung back the momentum for Australia, and yeah, it was just a very impressive knock.
Yeah, okay. And then is it fair to say that in a way New Zealand never really looked like chasing it? It wasn't loads, but I sort of get the same sense against when India played West Indies the other day, that even though India didn't get loads, that it was going to take something special to chase it down, especially when there's a bowler of the quality of Mitchell Starc, who took another 5-wicket haul stats, his third in the World Cup, and no bowler in history has ever taken more. He's now taken 24 wickets this competition, which is more than he took in 2015 when he was the leading wicket taker and player of the tournament. I don't know, we need to say too much on him because we talk about him loads. But he's just a brilliant bowler. But I guess the question really is it kind of concerns for New Zealand, despite them having had such a brilliant start to the competition?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your point, you know, what you mentioned there earlier, whether New Zealand ever looked like they were in it. And while watching that chase, it just never felt that way. There wasn't much intent. When Williamson and Ross Taylor were batting together, just because they are Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor, you think, you know, maybe they've got a shot here. But then we come back to the man, Starc, who just comes in, average gives him the ball to, you know, just come on for two overs, take a wicket, and he just seems to do it every time, and it's quite exceptional. He is just nine on unplayable at times. Good ball to get Williamson out today. And with New Zealand, I saw them play against Pakistan. I don't think there's needs to be...
That was their first loss of the tournament,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think there's needs to be overly concerned. They're a quality side. They've got, 11 points for a reason. But there are worries, of course, at the top of the order, especially Martin Guptill doesn't really look himself. You know, he had a fantastic World Cup 4 years ago, and he's really not sort of delivered this time round.
And he's been brilliant in the field, hasn't he? You often see with batsmen when they're out of nick, they just can't get a hand to it. I think of Keaton Jennings in the Test side last summer when he was he just was dropping everything, and it wasn't even dropping it was passing right through his legs without him getting in there. And the same with Dawid Malan, they found the way. Well, Keaton didn't find his way out the side, but he was nearest being dropped and then scored a brilliant 100 in Sri Lanka and then was catching everything. Whereas Guptill, he took an absolute screamer at leg gully, didn't he? And as like you see all these cricketers charts where he's right at the top of everything. It's an odd one, isn't it? Because you see him in the field, he doesn't look like he's particularly downbeat. I guess he's just sort of out of nick, but not out of sorts in a way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that was a ridiculous catch. Yeah, it's sensational.
So because you were there live and watching it, what was the reaction like? Because do you want to talk us through it? I guess it was a. Yeah.
Well, I saw Steve Smith hit the ball, and then I was looking towards the boundary because that's where I thought the ball was ending up. And then she got to sort of get out off the ground, and he's, you know, just got, and everyone's just losing it in the press box.
Hand
as well.
Sort of smoking, yeah.
Yeah, like it taken his hand off completely.
It was it was just for you listening. If you didn't watch it, it was a hook shot, and Martin Guptill was placed at leg gully, which I guess is a brilliant bit of captaincy from Kane Williamson as well.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, you could say so. Yeah.
And you'd like hook shots don't get caught at leg gully, but somehow this one did. It's really well worth a watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, Martin Guptill and I guess New Zealand's top order in general.
Yeah, so I mean they dropped Colin Munro, gave Henry Nicholls a go, but I think he only got about 8. That's an issue. Tom Latham doesn't seem in the greatest nick too. Last game, the positive was just how well Jimmy Neesham and Conda Graham batted. So there is still a very, you know, capable and solid batting lineup there. It's just those little things that might be of concern. But I wouldn't be overly concerned if I was a New Zealand fan. Australia do look top of the game, and so you know, you hands up to them.
No shame in losing. Sure, yeah. I guess the thing for me is I just wonder if they could have made a change to the lineup before today. Like, so that it seems like a reaction to having lost their first game, but the signs were there. Colin Munro wasn't really scoring any runs. Matt Henry wasn't looking at his best with the ball. A lot of people were saying you kind of want to get a leg spinner in. It hasn't been a leg spinners tournament, but Ishodi is that quality of bowler that you want to maybe get him in. But it's only as a reaction to defeat that they've brought those two in. Now they've got a game against England and then the semi-finals. They don't have a lot of time to get it right, even though these signs have been there for a while. Like, they might come to the World Cup semi-finals without Tim Southee having bowled the ball in the tournament, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Which would be well, it's bizarre to suggest at the beginning of the tournament that might have happened. And yeah, it just feels like they haven't nailed their best 11 despite having basically qualified for the semi-finals. It's an odd one.
Yeah, and I thought there's another guy sitting on the sidelines, Tom Blundell. Not playing ODI yet, but got a century in one of the warm-ups. Mm-hmm. And he's not been given a go yet. So it'll be interesting what happens now when they play England and what changes they make there, because, you know, they're actually running out of chances in a way to sort of try and test a few people.
Yeah, and they're still not quite qualified, even not just mathematically. If they lose in a big way to England, then their net run rate will take another hit, as it did today. And Bangladesh especially, if they win their last two games, one of which is against India, but we know they're a good side, and that India have had some frailties and stuff, we shouldn't be too surprised if they shock them there. They could end up sort of ruining, like, yeah, they're not totally secure yet. Anyway, that's enough on that game. I think let's get onto the thriller, Afghanistan Pakistan, what you're all here for, and my moment of the day, which is Gulbuddin Naib's his penultimate over, which I think was the 46th over of Pakistan's chase, and it was nip and tuck at this point, and what it looked like is that spin had been the way to go, and Gulbuddin Naib is an honest seamer, but not much more, and he comes on and goes for 16 in the over, and it sort of turned the contest on its head there, and there was a lot of stick for him on social media, a lot of people saying, maybe even accusing him of match fixing. It was quite poor things being said, really, and I think there needs to be some defence made of his decision, because he was kind of hamstrung. So Hamid Hassan, who's their opening bowler, went off with injury after two overs, so he was always being forced to make up some overs, and Samuel Ashenwari is how he'd done that, who is a part-time left-arm spinner who'd bowled well, gone at just 4 and over in his 8 overs, but in the 46th over of a clutch contest, do you want to be chucking your ball to a part-timer when spin is the way to go, or do you want to bring yourself in as the captain, like an established frontline bowler for your country? It's a much more marginal call than it seems in hindsight, and I think there even needs to be almost more praise given to him for the fact that he then came back and bowled the final over of the day, which they ended up when they lost the game. But it was you don't get a lot of players who, having gone for 16 and over, come back and want to bowl the 50th over. And I think he's done a good job in quite trying circumstances for Afghanistan. Have you've been at some of Afghanistan's games, have you, Taha? Is that right?
Well, no, actually, I've not been to Afghanistan's game, but that was quite a stern defence of Gulbuddin Naib there. I mean, he's been almost cast in sort of a villainous role, you know, he takes the captaincy of Askar Afghan, and Afghanistan have had this tournament where, you know, they still haven't got a win. But I mean, what do you make of that? Because you've followed this development quite a bit, haven't you? This whole captaincy change and all that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that there's been a lot said about Afghanistan's campaign, and I feel like some of it has been a bit wide of the mark. I think people have looked at their qualifying campaign and said, were the signs there then? And for me, that qualifying campaign, the fact that it was close to Afghanistan not making it to this World Cup, was more about how the rest of the world has caught up rather than how Afghanistan has slipped behind them. You've got to remember that West Indies also almost didn't make it through, and that's West Indies who, you know, smashed possible semi-finalists Pakistan. There's not as much of a gap as Afghanistan have made it seem. And there was a tweet from Anshi Rath, I don't know if you saw it, was a while back, but it came with a degree of sadness saying, like, this is not the Afghanistan that we know. And I think that the associate world, obviously Afghanistan are a full member, but they still kind of flag bearers, I think, for that world as new full members. They sort of feel that their cause is being damaged by this. And there's so much going on behind the scenes that is probably still to come out. I know Phil Simmons, the coach who's leaving after this tournament, has been accusing the Afghanistan Cricket Board of fake news regarding him asking for a contract extension, and has said things about him telling all after the tournament is over. There's been lots of changes behind the scenes in the Afghanistan Cricket Board, in the board itself there's been a lot more politicians come in, and it's the new selector who's changed the captaincy around. There's a lot going on which I think has to come out. I think their struggles are more to do with that, with general turmoil around the setup. And I guess the thing is that's what comes with being an established test nation, isn't it?
The expectations are definitely higher in Afghanistan now, when, as they should be. They're a good side, but you know, we talk about all the doom and gloom with Afghanistan, you know, all the politics going on in the background, but they've not been that bad.
That's true, yeah, they've almost won.
They nearly beat India. Sri Lanka, they botched a run chase. I think that might be one they look back on and think, you know, we could have got that win, definitely. And, you know, today it was a nervy win for Pakistan.
Yeah, really
nervy win.
That's true. And I guess the thing is, well as the expectations being higher, it's the fact that people are going to want a piece of Afghanistan cricket in the country, and they're going to start getting pulled from all sides in a way that they weren't before, and it's how I guess they deal with those influences. But you're right, and do you think is there something in the fact that it's the three Asian sides that they've come close to beating, who they have familiarity with playing in the Asia Cup and familiar and that sort of thing? Is there something in that they have a sort of less of a psychological hang up against them having? I mean, did they tie with India in the Asia Cup last year?
They had a decent Asia Cup, didn't they?
Yeah, they got semi-finals, and
it must be. I think that's definitely a pretty strong factor. That could be quite a strong factor. You know, they've not played. These conditions are very alien to them, and we have to recognise that. And that's a pretty valid point, in my opinion.
And on Pakistan, I guess. So you were at the game when Babar Azam scored that nerveless 100. And I'd say in that game they were nerveless, and in this game they were the opposite, I guess. What do you make of them today?
Well, it's just, you know, this is Pakistan cricket. You know, you don't get the news in performance is a bit of an anomaly. Such was the control of that run trace. The only time there was a sense of nerves in that game was when Mohammad Hafeez got out, and it felt like they might follow sort of a similar pattern to what happened against Australia when Hafeez got out to Aaron Finch, and then the run chase sort of collapsed and whatnot. But then the other day, you know, Harris Sahail and Babar Azam were exceptional, and just the way Pakistan dominated New Zealand in that run chase was brilliant to watch. And then today you get Pakistan doing Pastan things, you know. Imamul Haq tries to go downtown and gets stumped. Hafeez sort of like, there's not much footwork, and he sort of like slaps it and gets out, and then Sarfraz gets run out, and you know, Imran Wasim showed a cool head there. You know, he's a very understated cricketer, but you know, bowls very valuable left arm spin. Doesn't turn it much, but you know, he'll keep the runs down. He got a couple of wickets today as well, and then that sort of fed into his batting performance, where you know he gets Pakistan over the line, and what a seriously important win, especially in the context of, you know, top four places. You know, England would have loved a Afghanistan win today.
Yeah, and it's fair to say Imran Wasim's a sort of old school cricketer. As you say, you don't get that many spinners now who just kind of dart it and don't turn it. You could pick that's supposed to be dead in modern ODI cricket, and he's showing it's still alive. And then as a batsman as well, he's not really one of these big ball strikers. He's more of a finisher, more in your Michael Bevan, nowhere near the same class, but the guy who'll take it deep and sort of shepherd the tail, rather than the guy who's going to come out and blast 50 or 20 balls, do you think? Or
yeah, I think he's...
Has he got both?
He's someone people just don't talk about.
Yeah.
But this guy was involved in the Champions Trophy win, and he's like, he sort of just disappears. And watching the New Zealand game, you don't really pay attention to him, but then he can do these things. He's quite a nervous player, actually. And it was with what was going on today, and of course we'll get to the external circumstances of the Pakistan-Afghanistan game. It was an exceptional knock.
Yeah. I guess a couple more performances just to mention from the game. Shaheen Afridi took 4 wickets.
Well, I'll let you wax lyrical.
Well, I'm not going to wax lyrical. I'm just going to say that he's the first teenager to take a 4-wicket haul at a men's World Cup, and we're surely going to be hearing plenty more of him for the next 10, 15 years, you'd think.
He's found his rhythm now, as Shaheen. It's been a while. You know, Pakistan have been in England for quite some time now, and he struggled in those ODIs before the World Cup, and he's finally sort of finding his groove against New Zealand. He's just sort of found his length and just banged away, and you know, just got the outside edges. And I think it's perfect that he's coming, you know, into form at the perfect time for Pakistan.
Yeah, and when is he best, do you think? Because he's obviously a tall child. is he best when he's banging it in, or do you think he's more when he's full? Has he got both? What does he do? How does he do it best?
I don't know. I mean, we're still learning a lot about Shaheen Afridi.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to do
so. He's probably learning a lot about himself, I guess, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, like you said, he's a child.
Cool. And Mujeeb and Nabi both bowled brilliant again. Mujeeb has had a stirring comeback, I think. He went around the park against Australia and then bowled just the 3 overs against Sri Lanka, I think, and then like kept his cool when Morgan was going crazy against England, and has bowled brilliantly since then. He's opening the bowling sort of unique thing for a spinner to be a new ball specialist, and has sort of got that niche almost in world cricket. It's really great to see him back. So you alluded to it, and I think we probably should talk about the crowd issues at Headingley today. Do you want to sort of sum those up for us, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, well, we saw that. I think people were seeing the clips doing rounds on social media of just the brawls that broke out, and it's
people ejected from the ground, weren't there?
Yeah, that's right. People ejected from the ground, and it's kind of just really put a dampener on, you know, made things quite sad, especially because a lot of the talk about what's made this tournament quite one major positive about this tournament is, you know, some of these crowds, you know, we go to like, you know, Bangladesh games. I was at Pakistan, New Zealand, and the crowd at the end, I was watching the crowd, and I think it was Barber got to 99. I knew he thought he'd got to a ton, but it was just him getting to 99, just getting closer, and it was just the crowd erupting, and, you know, just, you didn't see any sort of anger in the crowd, you just saw goodwill, and obviously what we've seen in the footage today is just, it's just really sad and disappointing, and overshadows what was a very, you know, tense, you know, thriller of a game.
Yeah, okay. Should we touch on England India tomorrow? Looks like Jason Roy is going to be fit, which is good news. Slightly more doubts over Jofra Archer, but again, that means England bring back in Liam Plunkett. How do you see that game shaping up briefly? Because
Well, look, I will say if Roy comes back in, it's with this England side. What's been great about watching this England side over the last 4 years is that when someone's dropped out, you've never really felt like they've missed that person that much, because someone comes back in and they're a very adequate replacement. So when Jason Roy was, you know, previously dropping out the side, you know, you'd get like an Alex Hales come back in, and they've really missed Roy. They really have. So, you know, we don't know if he's, I doubt he's really fully fit, even if he plays. But that, I guess, maybe psychologically that also really helps England, just knowing that Jason Roy is there. Archer will be a big miss. I think he's just been, well, international cricket has just been, you know, child's play for him, really, since he's come in. But then, you know, England do have Liam Plunkett, who's another very understated cricketer, who will get the job done. He'll take wickets. But then he's also, you know, two very different fast bowlers that England have. It's going to be just a nervy day. Yeah. England fans, if you're a crazy England fan, then, you know, it might be tough to get sleep tonight, I reckon.
What were you doing tomorrow? Are you watching it, or what are your plans for tomorrow?
I will be watching it, yeah, but I might try and, you know, keep my mind off cricket, maybe go for a movie, something like that.
I heard rumours of watching yesterday, is that right?
Oh, those rumours are true, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I hope you enjoy a rare and well-deserved day off. This has been the Wisden Cricket Daily podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed with memories since 1979. I hope you've enjoyed our company. You're back in the safe hands of Yaz tomorrow. Thank you.